Okay, I know you've got some questions for Greg Braden, but have you seen these wide extremes that we're talking about in personality, in just about everything? Check in with us as well. We'll take the calls when we come right back. Greg Braden with us. Greg, are we going to continue to see these extremes, or at any point do they seem to simmer down?
You know, George, I think we will for the remainder of our lifetimes. Certainly with climate change, certainly with the economic pattern that we're entering into now. And that's why that's the whole point of this information, the turning point, is acknowledging the fact that we are entering into this new normal where it makes sense to adapt to a change in climate. It makes sense to adapt to disruptions and things that are familiar and seem regular to us certain times of year. It makes sense to adapt to a volatile economy. And, you know, the one thing that we haven't got to, and I want to get to as many calls as we can, but can I just give a very quick example of how people are making this adaptation in their everyday lives?
You expect me to say no to you?
Well, because this is, for me, this is the good news. I mean, we're talking about extremes, and that can be frightening for a lot of people. But when people can identify with how to thrive, I mentioned earlier, we live in the high deserts, northern New Mexico, and there's a man I know as a friend and a neighbor who's a builder of homes, ecologically friendly homes, for over 30 years. And he lost all of that in the housing crisis of 2008. He couldn't make a living building homes any longer. But he changed the question that we've been conditioned to ask ourselves for the bulk of our lifetimes based on the false science that tells us we live in a world of separation and a world of competition. We've asked ourselves every day this question, what can I get from the world that exists? What can I get when I enter into this job or this career, or this relationship, or this healthcare decision? But the new science tells us we live in a world of unity based on cooperation. That means the question has to change. And the new question is, what can I share? What can I contribute? What can I give? What can I offer to the world that's emerging? And that's what this man did. His name is Ken. And he woke up one morning and he realized people need to care for themselves and feed themselves. And he took his skills as a builder and he began to design and prototype and build a unique system of modular, raised bed, self-watering, self-heating covered greenhouses that can be 12 inches square and go in a high rise in New York, or they can be 4 feet by 8 feet strung together in a series in the deserts of New Mexico. And he's having so much fun doing this, George, and he's so successful, and he feels so good about what he's doing. He's thriving in the worst economic downturn in 80 years. I don't think he'll ever build another house. And all he did was change the question. And that's what's so important. He didn't say, what am I qualified to do? Where's my degree? What is it that I'm recognized for? He said, what is it that I can share or contribute or give that my friends and neighbors need? And I think this applies to every one of us. This is where people are thriving in the new normal that's created by unsustainable extremes. And I wanted to say that before we get into our questions for the rest of the hour.
Okay, let's take the calls. East, we have Jeff in Memphis, Missouri. Hi, Jeff, go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you very much for taking my call. Really love your show. My question point is about pollution. We have so much water pollution, and the comment or the statement was in the last 400 years that we've seen a great deal of environmental change. Well, in the last 400 years, we've had a great, huge population change. And number one thing when we have population is we have poo. We have effluent. We have sewage. And sewage has energy in it. And I'm saying, I believe that we can use the half-spent fuel and of our atomic waste and distill some of this stuff down and make methane gas. That my original question was, what effect does the methane, the methane gas that we're spewing onto the earth and into the freshwater aquifers and on the surface water with all our septic tanks and stuff like that, having in our atmosphere, affecting the sunlight. And so I say we can take the atomic waste and use that because it's still good for 100 years, and use it to heat the methane or the sewage. And that will clean the sewage, but first we have to contain the sewage. And that's what Ronald Reagan passed and mandated with the Federal Clean Water Standards Act back in the early 1980s.
All right, let's get some of your reaction to that, Greg.
Well, Jeff, first, thanks for your call. You covered a lot of ground. You asked about six questions in that one question.
Answer a couple of them.
Yeah, well, in summary, everything, Jeff, that you've mentioned, those are all factors of an unsustainable way of thinking and living. And while the solutions that you mentioned are viable, they are still solutions of an old way of thinking, just trying to improve on old ways of thinking. There are solar communities in northern New Mexico, for example, who are now using solar toilets. And that's a very new concept for a lot of people. But what happens is in a solar toilet, everything is desiccated. And the creator of these solar toilets, it's interesting, he's got a mason jar on his desk that has the waste for his family of three for 30 days. When there's no moisture in it, there's just a dust that fits into a mason jar for 30 days. It tremendously reduces, what it is that's left. But even the idea of reactors, I don't know if you've had anyone on your show, George, talking about thorium power.
No,
but I
really.
Think if our listeners aren't familiar with this, there is a mineral in the earth, mineral number 90 on the periodic table. It's very abundant. It's very inexpensive. It cannot be weaponized, produces no greenhouse gases, has very little waste byproduct, and the waste that's there can be recycled into greater power. It's called thorium, and we've had thorium reactors in our country, in India, in China, in Russia in the past. If we were really serious about doing something to create power with no greenhouse gases, you would be hearing more about thorium reactors, and you do in some circles. So all of this, I think we are talking about stepping stones, bridging an internal combustion nuclear society with where the technology says we can go, and this is the generation that gets to be that bridge.
All right, next up, we've got Dave in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the program, David. First-time caller.
Thank you. Thank you, George. I appreciate the show and your guests. You know, I'm coming from a different aspect, from a biblical and religious aspect, and in hearing this gentleman, I can see that he seems to be more of a humanist and a very positive thinking of what's going to happen in the future. Well, the Bible is very clear of what's already going to happen. You mentioned the coin, just the coin about, I don't know if it's good or bad. Well, you see, you should know if it's good or bad. It's not good. It's the economy is going to come to that. It's going to come to a one-world currency. But there's going to be a lot of bloodshed when that happens, because there's going to be Christians who are not going to take and be able to buy and sell because of this currency, because it's going to be regulated by not physical. It's going to be regulated by high-tech. It's going to be RFID chips. And it's going to be worldwide. We're coming to a world now where this is beyond 1984. And right now, you know, you're over here trying to save this. I would suggest for you to get your answers for you and your family. You better know what's going to be happening. I'm going to just tell you, I can prove it in just one little thing. Israel is the timepiece. Now, everybody talks, nobody knows the day and the hour of what's going to happen, but we do know the season and the times. The Lord does tell us about that. Israel is the timepiece, sir. When the Lord says, in the end days, I will bring my people back from the four corners of the earth, he did that. They established the shekel. They established a language. They made the desert boom. It said they're going to be exceedingly productive in fruit, producing fruit. They produce everything for Europe just about now. So the thing I'm trying to say is, and then the world's going to come against Israel. There's problems going around the world. There's going to be world powers up north of Israel. There was just Bedouin. I mean, there was nobody up in north of Israel. If you go north of Jerusalem, you're going to see Moscow. And then the 200 million soldiers, that's the east. It's going to come from China. They're all going to come against Israel. The point is, the Lord said, it's that generation, 1948, sir. 1948 is the timepiece. That generation will see all prophecy fulfilled. I was born in 1949. That means I'm 64 years old. That means, is it 75-year generation or 100? We don't, it's not.
Well, we don't know. That's absolutely true. The clock has started. And you talk about extremes, Greg, there's one there.
Well, it is. And, you know, everything, Dave, I appreciate your call. Everything you said is possible. But it doesn't have to come to pass. And I have studied the biblical texts, some of my earlier books on the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Torah and the Bible code specifically. And from that perspective, I understand, I hear everything you're saying. The Bible code, and I know we've done programs on this in the past as well, very clearly states when you see the worst prophecies, the most frightening prophecies of nuclear holocaust and Armageddon and all that, one of the discoveries of the Bible code was that within statistically significant distances from every one of those prophecies, there was a phrase that was overlooked in the beginning, and they've gone back and found again and again. And here's the phrase. The phrase in the Torah says, will you change it? Will you change it? It means the stuff is not set into stone. It means that we are on a trajectory of cycles. Impossibility, will you change it, means that we have the opportunity to transcend those frightening prophecies. If we do nothing, yes, they may come to pass, as they have in the past on a cyclic basis. But we have the opportunity to do something in this generation that's never been done before, and I don't know if it's good or bad or right or wrong, because it's all about the way it's implemented. When we come to a global currency, for example, it could be a very good thing. It could be. It depends on if it's implemented with greed or if it's implemented from a place of respecting the true nature of cooperation. And we're the generation that gets to change that. So I think it's important to acknowledge all of those possibilities.
Greg, when you were putting together the work, The Turning Point, and of course, Deep Truth, which was another one of your works, the angle you took, did you expect to go down that path?
I didn't know where it would lead, George, and that's one of the reasons for me. It's a good question. I appreciate you asking it. That's why I said it was healing for me to bring this together. It gave me an opportunity to really explore these different facets, not as an end unto themselves, but as facets of the big picture. And it's that big picture we've got to look at. It's not all about climate change. It's not all about the economy, but you put all those things together and we are definitely living a very, very different time. This isn't a new normal and we've got to think differently. And so it gave me an opportunity for a lot of people, George, that I've shared this information with. Now, your listeners, you have a very informed audience. And so many of your listeners have at least heard some of the facets of what we're talking about. A lot of people, it's new. They simply don't have time in their lives to think about these things. So I think this is the big first step, is saying, acknowledging this is a time of extremes, it's a fact, and acknowledging that we are entering a new normal, a new climate normal, a new economic normal, and that means we've got to think differently, and that's a fact. And once we get to that point, then there's an opening for other possibilities. But I didn't know for sure where it was going to lead. And it's interesting because it does play into indigenous prophecies, to biblical prophecy. It plays into humanistic elements. It plays into technological elements, scientific elements. I don't think we can separate them, George. It's all about life and us getting real with what's at our doorstep and our role in where it goes next.
Next up, we have Sue in Dayton, Ohio. Sue, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'm so happy you took my call, and we're freezing over here.
It is.
We're freezing like you would believe. Horrible. Yeah, and it is extreme, and I agree with your guest. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Sue. It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling tonight.
I'm in the sciences, too, and I agree on many of the points that you're mentioning, and also the idea of competition versus cooperation. That really needs to change. An outline, and I do have a proposal to ask you after I give you this brief outline. It is an extreme. The problem I see, though, is not convincing the peoples. You know, we're the ones that drive this engine. It's the people at the top that I find are quite static in their belief systems, you know, that they want to go on as things are and feed from us. Okay, setting that aside, that's a difficult thing to overcome. I hope they read your book. I do.
Well, they are, and I have been amazed to know in whose hands the books have been placed. That I can say that government leaders, and not only our government, but other governments, political leaders, and one of the reasons they're open to even looking at this is because of the fact of the way the world is changing. I just want to say I was doing a program on the East Coast, and I had a political official came up to me during a break, and he said something very telling. He said, there was a time when we thought we understood, and I don't know who we is. He didn't clarify that. He said, there's a time we thought we understood what was happening in the world. And what he said next, it was what was so telling for me. He said, something has gone awry is the term he used. And even we don't know where things are headed. And so he was there. He says, I said, why are you here? And he said, I want to see your take on what you think is happening and where you think the world is going. So I think it says to a large degree, we are all in uncharted territory. And that's the opening that forces us to think differently and work together. So I want to say that as you go on here.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, though, I'm in the biological sciences, but my background, I wanted to go into planetary sciences, so I have studied both meteorology and geology. I was just thinking, I accumulate a lot of facts, and then I try to reduce it down to simple terms. But you know as well as I do, we are floating on this enormous heat engine. And I'm not talking about tapping into just little geothermal springs. I'm talking about major change, such as driving rods down into a geostable area, of course, driving rods down to the point where they could accumulate direct heat energy and drive turbines off of that.
Sue, hold on. We're going to get the rest of your question when we come right back. On our next Coast to Coast program, Daniel Estulin joins us. We're going to talk about his latest work called Trans Evolution, The Coming Age of Human Destruction. Oh, my. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's go back to Sue in Dayton, Ohio, and then more questions and calls for you, Greg. Hey, Sue, go ahead.
Oh, great. Oh, by the way, I don't know about the thorium thing. It can be quite toxic. But back to what I was saying, we're floating on the enormous heat engine. It's gone on for billions of years. It will continue to go on. And I'm thinking, why not tap into that source? I'm not talking about little geothermal spring stuff like they do in Iceland, but literally they have mass drivers which go down deep into the earth to extract petroleum like in the North Sea. Why can't they use that type of stuff right here and now and just take that energy free for the taking? No pollution, and it's inexhaustible. I know it would be an enormous investment, but still.
You know they can, Sue, and I want to thank you for waiting for the over the break and for just the very thoughtful way you put all this together. The answer from my perspective, and when I was researching the book, I had to go back and look at technology. I looked at the internal combustion engine. I looked at the way we generate power. And what was so interesting to me is that so many of the things we're using today that are changing, they were never meant to be the end, that they were designed to be the bridge, the stepping stone, until something better came along. Tesla's power system that we're using now was designed to be temporary. The internal combustion engine was designed to be temporary. Fossil fuels were designed to be temporary. And then money, power, ego, greed stepped in, and we thought now for 100-plus years, that's the way things are. So the solutions you're talking about, those could also be stepping stones, and they'd be good stepping stones. But ultimately, we're looking at forms of energy that have no moving parts, where something doesn't have to combust or to expand to drive something else. We're talking about forms of energy, and the principles are already understood, that simply tap into the vast untapped potential of the space around us. And we know that those things are possible. So yes, what you're saying could be a bridge, it could be a stepping stone, a step in the right direction. Ultimately, I think we're looking at something even more more exotic in some respects, and also something that that allows us to power the world and to feed the world in ways now that we're only beginning to think are even possible. And I think those are all possible within our lifetime.
Greg, what are the variables that could affect this, that could affect these extremes, stop people from being able to change and fix?
You know, George, I'm an optimist, and I'm also a realist.
Yes.
And I am optimistic about what I'm seeing behind the scenes and publicly. I'm seeing levels of cooperation opening up between organizations and governments behind the scenes in a way that I didn't even see, you know, since the 70s and certainly through the Cold War years. And I think that the magnitude of what we face is the catalyst, George. It's a good question. Because if the world's not here, nobody, you can have all the money in the world, and if you have no world to enjoy, what difference does it make? I don't think anyone wants the war that so many people have predicted. I don't think anyone wants the economic collapse that so many people say are possible. And what's interesting to me is whether we're looking at nature as a scientist or if you're looking at the biblical perspective, as the gentleman that called earlier, they all allow for turning points. They all allow for us to shift the course and change the outcome if we can acknowledge the facts and embrace the opportunities. If we do nothing, those frightening things may certainly come to pass, but they don't have to. And this is the generation that gets to make that choice.
Let's go to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Larry, hello there.
George, always a pleasure to talk to you, and you too, Mr. Guest Speaker.
Larry, thanks for calling tonight. What can I do for you?
Well, let me just pass this on. First of all, I enjoyed what you spoke earlier about the gentleman who lost his job because of the housing situation of construction and then went out on his own to do something he enjoyed to do. So I just want to pass on three words of advice, and that is, one, always rely on your talents. And if something like that befalls you where you lose your job, do your best to use your talents or something that you know personally about or never experienced or tried, and attempt to start a new career like this gentleman did. That's phenomenal. That's what's going to keep us going in these times. The second ball is to the younger generation, and that is, you know, there's a lot of people that lose their jobs, and they're complacent, and they stay where they're at, and they say, well, I can't get a job. Well, the jobs might not be there, so you might have to bite the bullet and move to a place where there is a job. I tell young kids, I'm friends of my sons who are going to college, which you agree in, great, but if you come back to your hometown, that job might not be there because no jobs like that exist with that degree. And you might have to move to a different city to pursue a career. And don't worry, you can come on to visit. Family can go visit you. And the third to the young generation is never strive to be rich in your job, because if you strive to be rich, you'll never be rich enough. Strive to be financially comfortable, so your bills will be paid, and yeah, you could take that weekend jaunt with your wife and family, but never strive to be rich because you'll never be rich enough. And I just want to add those comments.
Larry, I like the way you think, and I appreciate you calling in tonight. You know, it's so true, and this was the point of the story that I shared about. The gentleman's name was Ken.
Mm-hmm.
he didn't rely upon a degree or a certificate. He tapped into something that he had a passion for. And I know every one of our listeners, we've got things that we learn to do in our lives to make a living. Some of us, that happens to be our greatest joy. Some of us do those things for a living to give us the time to experience our greatest joy. But in the new normal that's emerging, whatever that natural talent or passion is, you may or may not have a degree or a certificate or something that says, you know, that you can do this, but you become very good at it because it came so natural to you. And right now, this is the time when our neighborhoods, our neighbors, our communities, our world needs those unique talents. That's what creates the ability to thrive in this new. We don't want to just survive. We don't want to just get by a tough time waiting for the old normal to return. That's the old thinking. What we're doing is talking about learning to thrive by taking advantage of our natural gifts in the new normal that's emerging. And Larry, I think that's exactly what you're saying. I appreciate it.
So, Greg, if you had that mass audience, which you do right now, the opportunity to talk to millions about change and about extremes, you have the platform for 2 minutes.
So what would I say to them right
mm-hmm.
now? I would say don't buy into the fear of what the media is sharing with us. Don't buy into the fear of what many of your neighbors are saying. If we look at the facts, what they tell us is we are living a rare, pivotal moment of change, a rare opportunity, precious, precious moment in the history of civilization and the history of our world. Very, very few generations have ever had the opportunities that we have now, and this is when we need your skills and your talents. I have so much respect for Buckminster Fuller. So I could probably do a whole program on his ideas and his philosophies. One of the things he said stuck with me. It has for so much of my life. He said, you're never going to change things by fighting the existing reality. He says, to change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. Well, I think that's right where we are right now, George. The way of thinking of the past, that existing model is obsolete. And if we keep fighting against the change it takes to adapt to the new normal, that's where the hurt and the struggle comes in. So it makes sense to adapt to the new normal. That's our turning point. That's what I would say.
We go now to our wild card line. Alex in Los Angeles, right around the corner. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Greg, is it your guest name?
Yes, Greg Braden.
It is, Alex. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. So I called in to just comment on something. I recently went to visit the Mount Wilson Observatory, and it's like one of the places that studied the sun for most. They made a lot of discoveries from the sun, and they have this museum. In it, they have like just framed pictures of the sun, and about three of the framed pictures, they were like there, and to me that was a propaganda piece in a sense. Their whole purpose was to say that the sun has no effect on Earth's weather. And I found it so bizarre that the place that has studied the sun the most, one of the most, you know, they devoted so much energy with the telescope to always look at the sun. And here it is, they're saying that the sun has no effect, where if it wasn't for the sun, it would be like, what, like negative 200 degrees or something, right?
Well, so, Alex, I haven't seen that exhibit specifically, but I know the data tells us that the sun has a profound effect upon the climate of the Earth, and that means it has a profound effect upon the local weather. Local weather is a result of the global climate. And the sunspot cycles are a big part of that. And it's because of the sunspot cycles and where we are right now that many scientists are concerned about not global warming. You notice they've kind of dropped the term global warming out of the conversation. It's now called climate change.
Yeah,
and now they're talking about global cooling because of the low levels of sunspot activity that usually predict a cooling, not an ice age, I'm not saying that, but just a cooling trend. But it doesn't have to cool much to affect the way that we grow our food that the world relies upon, especially in the Northern Hemisphere. So this is another one of those places where it makes sense to recognize that the part of the extreme is linked to our relationship to the sun and what that means to us in our lives right now.
We do have a special guest who believes that we are in an ice age right now. A little one.
George is a geologist. This is always interesting to me because that's the controversy. Are we in one? Are we out of one? We're always in some kind of an ice age. We're in what right now is called an interglacial. It's between the extremes. The last ice age ended about 13,000 years ago, 12,000 years ago. And the problem with everybody jumping on board of the global warming climate change story is that nobody is preparing for what comes after the brief, intense warming, and that's the cooling. Again, it affects the northern hemisphere more, where most of the landmass, most of the people, most of our food is grown. So that's part of my concern. I think we're setting ourselves up for some very difficult times if we completely eliminate the possibility of any other story. And the fact is, the data from the Earth itself, the Earth herself, does not support the story that the mainstream is giving us when it comes to climate change.
Let's go to
it to ourselves to answer those four questions that I mentioned earlier.
Colton, New York, it's Jerry's turn. Jerry, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Mm-hmm.
And before I get to my comment, my question, I just got to tell you, I have a 17-year-old Jack Russell here up in Colton, Illinois.
Great, great dog.
At 5 p.m. on the East Coast, or a.m. on the East Coast every morning, when you play the closing theme, we do the Cusco dance. It never gets old. I've got a quick comment and then a question for your guest. And the comment is, for the past 10 years, I've been trying to lead by example. I have a 100-mile-per-gallon car, 115-mile-per-gallon motorcycle, human hybrid lithium rocket trike. I did that for students. I took a tiny house off the grid, and I'm less than 30 feet from a utility line, using microsolar, et cetera. I speak with large groups in the community at campuses and things of that nature. As your guest stated, I try to empower them with stepping stones so they can take advantage of the changes we see. The problem is, at the end of these presentations, I ask these groups a question. What will it take to change your behavior? Will it be this presentation? Will it be education? Examples I set? Or will you drive this machine right into the ground until it affects you? 90% of these people say they're going to drive this machine right into the ground until it affects them.
Hmm.
What can I do more than what I'm doing now to try to reach these people?
Jerry, first I want to thank you for the work you're doing and the example that you're setting. And I think the answer is in the question that you just asked. My experience, my personal experience, is that we can never convince or persuade anyone of anything. What we can do is share the facts and help people to find where those facts fit in their lives. But whether we're talking about energy and the way we live on or off the grid or the cars we drive, or whether we're talking about war between nations, whether we're talking about what's happening between Israelis and the Palestinians or the Iranians and Americans, whatever it is, the next part of what you said, I think, is the key, and it's the young generation. My knowledge tells me that we could change in a heartbeat. It's possible. But my experience tells me that the human factor of hurt, there is so much hurt that runs so deep in the current generation from World War II, from the Cold War, from the way that nations were carved up and formed. That original hurt is so deep, it's difficult for this generation to overcome it. However, the young people, the next generation, all they know are the stories. And they hear the stories from their parents, but they didn't experience the original hurt. There are exceptions. I mean, certainly what's happening in Syria is an exception to that now. But my sense is, if we can hold the world together for the younger generation, if we can prevent that war that so many people feel is going to happen in the Middle East, if we can prevent that economic breakdown that never needs happen, just for a few more years, as that younger generation comes up and begins to influence the world in the ways that they already are in some parts of the world, I think that's the hope, is because they don't have, they want to be a global community. They want to share music. They want to share art. They want to share sports. They want to participate in the technology. And the hurt that their parents tells them about, they understand it, but they didn't have the direct experience. And I think that's it's a factor that's often overlooked, but I think it's the hope. So I don't think we could convince or persuade, but we can share the information and help people to see where that fits into their lives. So that was a long answer to a short question.
Greg, almost out of time. When do I see you next?
George, I have the honor of being on your panel at Conscious Life Expo in just a few weeks.
Great.
In Los Angeles. I look forward to being in your part of the world.
That's fun. It's always a great little event, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's an amazing opportunity to reach a broad cross-section of people from every culture, every economy from across the world. And that's why I look forward to it every year.
I wonder what you're going to talk about.
I'm going to talk about whatever your panel is all about.
All right, Greg. You take care of yourself.
Thank you for tonight, George. I appreciate it.
Give out your website, if you would, to those people
driving. www.gregbraden.com. That's Greg with two G's, GREGGBRADEN.com.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks so much, George. Take care.
Always a pleasure having you on the program. What a really enlightened individual he is. I mean, he just is just very, very refreshing. And take time to get up to his website, and we've been talking about his latest work called The Turning Point, Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. Well, that wraps it up for tonight. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.